It's a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll recap Miami's loss to the Sacramento Kings and get to some of your Twitter questions. And then we'll talk to Heat nemesis Jason Terry about his history playing the Heat. Thank you for listening and subscribing as always. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg. My usual co-host, David Bramil, not with me recapping the game today, but he will be joining the show later on as we get to his conversation, again, with Jason Terry, known Heat nemesis, but a really good interview, and I think you're going to want to stick around and listen to that. I wasn't big on the idea of interviewing Jason Terry. I didn't think that Heat fans were going to want to hear it necessarily, but it's an awesome conversation that David has with Jason Terry. So I highly recommend you stick around. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the recap because I want to get to your Twitter questions. I want to leave plenty of time for David's interview. Plus the Heat lost, and I just don't really want to talk about it all that much. Look, the Heat lost to the Kings the second time this season, falling on Wednesday night, 123-119, and falling to 0-2 on this West Coast road trip, despite Goran Dragic doing his best to steal this game. With the Heat down 10 in the final 5 minutes of regulation, he scored 10 points, and Miami rallied to take the lead with 4 seconds left. The Kings played the foul game with Kelly Olynyk. Olynyk missed one of his two free throws, and then De'Aaron Fox, at the end of regulation, forces overtime with a buzzer-beating layup. The Heat played good defense on the layup. You can't really take anything away from Miami there. Just De'Aaron Fox has proven to be a clutch player in his rookie season. Even though he's not a great shooter, his percentages aren't high, his scoring numbers aren't through the roof, but he's come up big in clutch situations, and he did it again for Sacramento. The Kings then outscored Miami in halftime, 12-8 to win the game. Miami really felt the absence of Hassan Whiteside, getting outscored 58-40 in the paint. They didn't have an answer for Zach Randolph, who did Zach Randolph things in the low post. He finished with 22 points on 9-16 shooting. Bam Adebayo, who started at center, struggled against his size. Kelly Olynyk didn't fare much better, giving up several layups at the rim. Miami had a hard time defending the pick and roll, had a hard time defending just Zach Randolph's brute Zach Randolph ability in the paint. And for Bam Adebayo, look, between his game in Portland and this game in Sacramento, this road trip has not been kind to Bam. The defense just didn't show up. To put it in perspective, the Kings, who have had the second worst offensive rating in the league, had a rating of 117 tonight, which would rank first by far for the season over teams like Houston and Golden State. So the Heat, they're going to try to forget this one. They play the Lakers in LA on Friday, fortunately. For Miami, the Milwaukee Bucks lost to the Magic as well, but the Heat do still fall a half game back to the eighth place in the East. Now, let's move on to your Twitter questions. Jeff writes in, something that stuck out to me was that possession where Dragic drove right and the runner, but tried to pivot back to the middle when the play wasn't there. Now, Jeff's talking about the very last play. I spoke with Goran Dragic after the game. I was in Sacramento for the game, and Dragic said that play was drawn up as a Kelly Olynyk slip screen to create some pick and roll penetration, but the Kings just defended it really well. They sealed off the rim. Garrett Temple played great one-on-one defense against Dragic, and Dragic might have been able to get the ball to somebody else along the perimeter, but there was just not a lot of time left, and by the time Garrett Temple sort of stonewalled him in the paint, the rest of the Kings sort of swarmed Dragic there, so that would have been difficult either way. So it's a tough play. It's a tough play, but look, I think you got to give Sacramento's credit. You got to give that Sacramento defense credit and not necessarily blame Miami's offense. I think that was just really good defense by the Kings, which, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow because the Kings are such a bad team. But Garrett Temple is a good basketball player. He's unfortunately playing for Sacramento. I mean, he's a guy who could really help probably. I thought that the Cavaliers should have targeted him at the trade deadline instead of George Hill. I think he's somebody that could really help a team. He's a good basketball player. He's their number one. He's sort of the Justice Winslow or Josh Richardson of that team. He's the guy that they always put on the on the primary score on the opponent. So good defense by them. And look, Dragic stepped up on a night when the Heat were without their usual closers. Dwayne Wade and Josh Richardson did not play in that game. And Dragic stepped up. He accounted for 12 points in the final 5 minutes of regulation, 10 points and an assist. He almost won that game single-handedly for Miami. So we can look at that last possession. You could blame Dragic, but I'm not necessarily saying Jeff did, who wrote this in. But without Dragic, Miami doesn't even have a chance to win that game, and they probably should have won that game anyway. All right, Taylor writes in, this team could have a good record because of all the bad teams they've lost against. I don't understand. Look, this is starting to remind me last year when the Heat dropped crucial late games in March to the Knicks and the Magic. Those were games that ultimately cost Miami a playoff position. Now, I think Miami is far enough now in the playoff hunt or in the playoff race where they're not going to cost themselves a playoff spot because the other teams, the 9th and 10th teams in the East, Charlotte and Detroit, are just so far behind that I don't think Miami's going to drop that many games. But this could cost them a seed to get them a little bit higher in the playoffs and maybe give them an easier matchup. Now, that said, Toronto is going to be the number one seed. Boston's most likely going to be the number two seed. But with all the injuries that the Celtics are facing, it might not be the worst thing in the world to be the 7th seed. Now, I don't want to be the 8th seed. If you're the Heat, the goal should be, you know, if you're talking about the final 3 seeds, 6, 7, 8, 6 is going to face Cleveland, 7 is going to face Boston, 8 is going to face Toronto. That 7th spot is a sweet spot, again, because of how brutally injured that the Boston Celtics are. They're without Marcus Smart. You know, Kyrie Irving's been in and out. They're without a few of their players. Gordon Hayward, obviously, is not playing there. Jaylen Brown's been dealing with some issues there. And Jason Tatum has seemed to hit the rookie wall a little bit, even though he had a good game against Washington. So that's where I'm at. If I'm the Heat, I'm looking at that 7th spot, and you can't necessarily lose these games at this point in the season if you want to catch up with the Milwaukee Bucks for that seed. We're going to get to that Jason Terry conversation that David had. It's a really good conversation. Hope you guys enjoy it. But first, look, it's time to talk to you about the boatload of money that you can make this week by betting at MyBookie. If you haven't checked them out, this is the perfect time to get into the action. The madness of March is here. Lay down some money and score big on college hoops. Join me and thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout from those other betting sites? Come join MyBookie today. I'd only recommend a service that's been good to me and our listeners. That's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay, fast and without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. You even have in-game live betting, so you can even place bets after tip-off, after halftime of the first period during March Madness. Join now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. You can even enter it for a chance to win their $1 million bracket challenge. All you have to do is use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. Visit MyBookie today. Play, win, and get paid. That'll do it for me. Let's get to David's conversation now with Jason Terry.
For this segment, we have an interview with current Milwaukee Bucks guard and Miami Heat nemesis Jason Terry. Now, I know a lot of you are probably saying to yourselves, why the heck would I want to listen to an interview with Jason Terry? Well, I understand he was a thorn in Miami's side for a long time, but I got a chance to sit down with him for a brief conversation after a shoot-around in Orlando, and he talked at length about his motivation facing the Heat, his finals experiences against Miami, and LeBron's struggles in 2011. Terry talked about his superstition of wearing an opposing team's shorts before every game, something he still does in his 19th year, and the infamous tattoo of the Larry O'Brien trophy he got with Dallas before the 2010 season began. He also talked about Miami's current team, as well as Milwaukee's struggles with consistency. All in all, I think it was an interesting conversation from someone who has seen it all during his NBA career, and so straight from the Amway Center in Orlando, here's Jason Terry.
First of all, do you consider yourself a nemesis for Heat?
You could say so, somewhat, just because of our history.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, the utter disappointment from when they beat us in 05, 06, and then our sweet vengeance in 2010, 11. will always be one of the defining moments in my career. But even before then, when I played with the Atlanta Hawks, I could always just remember getting up to play in that building, in the Miami Heat building. It was just something about the environment, the atmosphere, that made me want to step up. I think because I was a big Tim Hardaway fan back in the day, and I always wanted to just play good, you know, because, that used to be his team.
Absolutely. But it seemed from the fan perspective that you always had something a little extra to give those Heat teams.
Oh, for sure. No, 100%. 100%. I just a little extra motivation every time, obviously because of the history. Nothing other than that. No personal vendettas. The disappointment that we went through. Understanding that, hey, you took something from me. And it just happened to be them.
You feel that you got robbed in 2016?
No, I just feel they, if you look at their roster compared to ours, they were the better team. You have four Hall of Famers on that team. It's never been heard of. So, in all actuality, we really overachieved to even be up 2-0. But once we were up 2-0, we definitely had the mindset that we thought we could beat them. But definitely going in, their roster was stacked up against ours.
Do you feel the exact opposite in 2011? Do you think that their roster was more stacked than yours?
No, 2011, it was more of the playing field was even. Though they had the three superstars, we had, two, possibly three Hall of Famers, and we had the extra motivation. So, they had all the hype. We were like the dark horse, the underdog. So, it was classic, though.
A lot of people felt that he probably could have won that series. At least in Miami, anyway, they felt they could have won that series if LeBron hadn't.
They didn't have
a bad series.
They didn't have a chance. They didn't have a chance. I mean, I was going to literally die on that court to come my way with the victory in that series. You would have had to kill me. I literally didn't care who they had in uniform. LeBron, D-Wade, Shaq, old D-Wade, Lonzo Mourning. We were coming out of Miami victorious.
I think a lot of Heat fans probably would want to kill you. I think your trademark move, flying around the court, I think that's burned in a lot of Heat fans' memories there.
Yep.
You had a big game against them, I think, in game six, wasn't it? He scored 27 points.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was the closeout game. That was, me understanding what was at stake and knowing that if we allowed them to go to a game seven, anything could happen. Though we would be going home, we didn't want to go home. And the extra motivation to end it on their court as they did to us in years prior.
Absolutely. Is it true about the shorts? Do you still do that?
Yep. I've collected every single pair of shorts from all 30 teams around the league, and that superstition's still intact.
You still have a superstition now as you were when you first started off in the league?
Yeah, for sure. Even more now, because at this age, you try to find anything that can semblance of a big game or a big moment or a big shot in your career, whatever you did to kind of drum up that memory.
I got to ask you, obviously, can I see the tattoo?
Yep.
There it is.
That's it.
So what was your mind process? What were you thinking when you got that tattoo?
Actually, it's funny because we're at the scene of the crime. We were in Orlando in preseason. Deshaun Stevenson resides here. And we had a team gathering at his house, a little barbecue. And he had a tattoo artist there. And guys were getting, like, grandma's name, certain quotes, sayings. And I was like, man, listen, we had a team that could really do something special. And I really honestly, truly believe it. So what I'm going to do, since y'all don't think I'm playing, I'm going to get the tattoo of the championship trophy now. And they looking at me like, he ain't going to do it. About 30 minutes later, I'm walking around the house flexing my bicep. And they're like, he did it. But I think guys kind of looked at that and said, damn, Jet believes something. He believes in us. And so they played extra hard for me.
Did you were you still gonna get it removed if you hadn't won somehow in 2011?
No, because I did it again when I went to play for the Celtics, because I thought we had a realistic chance of winning playing with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett and Rondo.
Absolutely.
And it's still there. The Celtic with the trophy. But it never happened. Never came to fruition.
Yeah. Because of Miami, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So I gotta ask you, like, did you see anything in the Heat team when they started falling apart there in 2011?
Oh yeah, it was a game, particularly game four at home. I think LeBron had a triple-double, and it wasn't a good triple-double. It was low in points, yeah. You know, maybe 10 assists, 10 rebounds. But he was on the back stanchion underneath their basket, and he just looked exhausted. And I said, uh-oh, I think we've got to him. I think we've gotten to him. Because, I mean, he literally had a triple-double. He did all he could do for his team, and it wasn't enough. And so I knew then that there was a chip in the armor.
What do you think was the difference that year and then later on? I mean, he obviously he took his game to another level and kind of evolved in his relationship.
Well, I think that moment in time in history helped him and motivated him to work on his all-around game and become better, become a better jump shooter, become a better post player, just so he had all the weapons in his arsenal. To be a factor on the offensive end of the court, because then we knew he was one-dimensional. So we knew if we put multiple defenders on him, we knew if we crowded the paint, then he would primarily become a jump shooter, which was not his strength. Now, you fall off of him, you sag off, you crowd the paint, he can hit the step-back jump shot. He can hit the three-point shot. And that was something he didn't have then.
Fast forward to this season, obviously you two are kind of battling back and forth between you and the Heat for the kind of standings now. Where do you see in that team, and what do you think you have as far as how you match up against them?
You know what? Miami Heat, since I've been in the league, historically, and this is all Pat Riley's imprint, is that they play hard. Regardless of who's in uniform, who's hurt, they play extremely hard, and you have to match their intensity and their effort. And, you know, right now, what they're doing consistently on a night-to-night basis is they're giving maximum effort. They move the ball, they defend, and they give maximum effort. And I think that's what has them in the playoff race now, and that's what makes them dangerous in the playoffs when you have a big guy like Hassan Whiteside, and then you have guards that understand their role, and a deep bench, you have a realistic shot to you know, do damage in the playoffs.
How has your role changed over the couple seasons you've been here with Milwaukee? I know, obviously, you have a mentorship role, but you're also a big component as far as a part of the rotation. You know?
Yeah, well, this year, different a little bit from last year, is they're counting on me to make shots now. Last year, if I made shots, it was a bonus. This year, they're counting on me because we have two rotational backcourt players out. And the lack of perimeter shooting, you know, to free up guys like Giannis and Bledsoe. They need me out here to stretch the floor and keep the defense honest.
Obviously, you know, the replacement of the head coach, that's a sensitive subject, but I know one of the things that you talked about in the past was that you helped kind of, make this a conducive to a learning environment. Do you feel that you've done that?
Oh, 100%. I think, understanding Jason Kidd's vision and his passion to help young guys understand the game, give them a routine that they can carry on with them for the rest of their career, to give them longevity, to teach them on a day-to-day basis is something that he built in this culture. And it's something when I came, I continue to enhance it. And so even though he's gone, you know, guys still continue to have their rituals, their routines, and that's something that he implemented.
What do you think has been the biggest problem with this team? I know a lot of people say it's been inconsistency. Has it been injury, in your opinion? What is it that you think?
I just think it's been the continual growth of our superstars. You're going to have ups and downs. You're going to have inconsistencies. Then it's the overall team chemistry. When you have injuries, when you have guys coming back from injury, it takes time for guys to get a rhythm with each other out on the basketball floor when you don't have the same practice time that you've had in years past. There's not much time to practice, and so that chemistry is done out on the floor, and that's what gives you some of those inconsistent moments. But in a series, when you're facing the same team, when you know what's coming, we believe we have the team that can really make some noise this year.
How realistic can this team go?
It's very real. And I was in a very similar situation in Houston my first year with Dwight and James. When they were right on the cusp, obviously Dwight had been there before, but James was on the cusp of becoming a megastar in this league. Giannis is at a very similar phase. And we over-exceeded expectations. Our goal was just to get to the second round. We ended up going to the Western Conference Finals with guys out, with guys injured. And that was because, you know, James really took his game to another level. And our role players played like superstars.
Obviously, you got a bunch of players that are, you know, a little bit older nowadays, and Vince Carter, Manu Ginobili, but you're certainly among those, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you ever get tired of hearing the questions about your age and stuff like that? Or?
Well, I think that's kind of what fuels you, and it's something that you can't hide from, and it's always going to be there. But for me, age is a limitation that people put on you, other people put on you. Yeah, it's real. You're 40 years old, but what does that mean in actuality? Physically, I'm great. Mentally, I'm at the highest I've ever been as far as understanding the game, knowing tendencies, knowing the other team's game plans, and really being an extension of the coach on the floor and in the locker room. And I think that's what gives me my edge. That's what gives me my advantage.
You going to keep playing beyond this year?
I can, yes. I will. That is my goal, God willing.
I know that, you know, obviously you have been led to a coaching position this past summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But is that coaching in the, still part of your future as far as you know?
No question. Coaching, management, broadcasting is definitely a part of my future. It's a plan that I implemented probably about 6 years ago, and I've been doing things, my due diligence, to put myself in a position to acquire one of those opportunities when I'm done playing.
Has your career exceeded expectations or lived up to your expectations?
You know what? I've over-exceeded my expectations because when I stepped foot on the campus of Arizona, I just wanted to be a professional basketball player, whether that was overseas or in the NBA. And here I am 19 years later, won an NBA championship, sixth man of the year, third all-time NBA three-pointers. I mean, it's just a dream come true. And obviously, I didn't dream to play this long, but I don't want to wake up. I just want to keep going.
That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time.